Well, apparently, Michael Scott is on a date, and that, my friend, changes everything.
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, Ethan Weiss here with you once again after quite a hiatus. Before we get into everything, you know what we got to do? We got to take care of the housekeeping. So first things first, subscribe. We're everywhere. iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio. Smash the subscribe button. I forgot Spotify, I think. Smash the subscribe button. Rate us 5 stars. Leave a nice review. Thank you guys for tuning in every week. Go follow us on Twitter. You can follow me at EthanGSN. You can follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow the blog at GothamSN. And I think we have a sponsor this week. The sponsor is MyBookie. You can go to mybookie.ag to gamble on the NFL and college football all season long. Use promo code Gotham, G-O-T-H-A-M. Go to MyBookie, enter that. I think they're giving up bonuses up to $1,000 on your first deposit. Weiss, I know you're not much of a gambler. I did okay week one NFL. I think I took a little bit of a loss. If that, I broke even maybe. College football is really my bread and butter. I actually went 22-10-1 this weekend, so a lot of extra moolah for me this upcoming week. So go to mybookie.ag, promo code Gotham, and if you're curious as to what I'm betting, I log all my picks on the Action Network app, so go ahead and download that and follow me as well. That's pretty much it for the housekeeping. Weiss, welcome back. We've both been traveling the world and have come back a miserable fucking football team.
Well, yeah, it's a miserable team, but I mean, it's what we expected. I mean, this year, right? I don't know what kind of expectations people had, but I sort of expected what I saw.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it doesn't bring any of us pleasure that the Giants are a bad football team, but as we've spoken about before, the sort of I told you so moment to all the idiots out there who were optimistic for a 10-win season with this garbage roster. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Things are not going to get much better, especially later in the season. If you're getting shellacked by the Cowboys, 35-17, the Eagles are probably going to do the same thing. God knows what's going to happen against the Redskins, who looked half-decent, dare I say, week one. You know, it's going to be a long season. And to make matters worse, the Giants have opened up as a home underdog to the goddamn Bills. Where do you want to start with this team? I think the obvious starting point is just how miserable the defense is. But again, I do not know what people were expecting.
Yeah, coming into it, I sort of expected to see what we saw on Sunday. To that degree, certainly not. But
right.
Listen, this is a young team with a lot of inexperienced players on the defense. Guys in their second year, guys in their first year, new players. I sort of expected to see this. I mean, we talked about it all offseason. I mean, this defense is going to struggle early on. And it might probably will struggle the entire season. But I think, you know, the hope is that as these young guys continue to develop, I mean, for a lot of them, Sunday was their first game.
Right.
So you expect it to get better. The miscommunication stuff, I know a lot of people are looking to point that finger somewhere. I just pointed at the simple fact that, again, you know, young guys, inexperienced, this is expected. And when, you know, they were going up against an offense like the Dallas Cowboys, who have a really good offensive line, who can run the football. And now with Amari Cooper inserted into the equation, they have, you know, talent on the outside they can get the ball to. And then obviously when you factor in the tight ends and you know the Giants just can't cover tight ends, you know, the Cowboys are an elite team in this league. So pretty expected, not really surprised by it. Only thing I was really surprised at was the amount of angry fans on Twitter. I was sort of taken back by it. I had to spend the majority of the afternoon sort of defending the Giants, you know, and some of their decisions. But I come away from week one saying, you know, that's pretty much what I expected to see. I mean, I got nothing else for you, really. I mean, I expected what I saw on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the defense, right? And yeah, I mean, you could talk about the inexperience, and obviously it's a very inexperienced group, but outside of the inexperienced players, there are also a number of veterans who just simply aren't that good. And, you know, it's sort of a lot of homerism going on. You know, no one overrates their prospects more than fans of a certain team. You know, everyone's raving about Lorenzo Carter and B.J. Hill and Dalvin Tomlinson and, you know, the young secondary that's showing a lot of promise in the preseason. And it's like, a lot of these guys are like mid to late round picks. There's UDFAs, there's overpaid veterans. What did people think was going to happen? I mean, I don't think we expected the route that we saw on Sunday. But again, like, these are our third and fourth round picks. These aren't first round studs that are supposed to be like immediate impact players. B.J. Hill's a third-round pick. Lorenzo Carter is a third-round pick. The Giants have three defensive tackles playing along their defensive line, right? They don't have a pass rusher on this roster. And going up against the Cowboys' offensive line, what did people think was going to happen? And I think we can sort of transition into the James Betcher discussion. I simply don't get it. And, you know, my entire point here is, sure, you can criticize the coaching staff, and we'll talk about Pat Shurmur and his terrible play calling in a little bit, but to blame James Betcher for that debacle, given the talent that he is dealing with on his roster, is ridiculous. These are guys that were brought in by Dave Gettleman, and for the people saying, oh, well, he has a say in the roster, yeah, of course he does, because he's the coordinator. But those pointing to the Cardinal rejects that he brought over, Tyrann Mathieu, Patrick Peterson, and Chandler Jones ain't walking through the door. When you have 15% of your cap space dedicated to two quarterbacks and another 18% tied up in dead money, and you're overpaying Nate Solder, and you've just acquired Zeitler, and you got a guy like Janoris Jenkins who's making a lot of money on the defensive side of the ball, you only have so much cap space. The best worst-case scenario is you at least just bring in guys who have some sort of familiarity with the system and hope it works. These guys just aren't good, right? So if James Betcher had a say, the say was, well, you know what? At least they know the system. Let's hope for the best here. And to put all this blame on him after week one is ridiculous, and I think we're on the same page. I'll let you go in a second. But, I mean, you pointed out to me on Twitter that the scapegoating has already begun.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think with Betcher, I think it's, if you start seeing a lot of this miscommunication throughout the season, then yeah, there's a cause for concern. But I think, I mean, look, it's week one and people are going to overreact. But it goes back to expectation. I mean, people have to be realistic. I mean, you talk about it. Lorenzo Carter is a second-year guy drafted in the third round. B.J. Hill, third-round pick, second-year guy. Dexter Lawrence playing in his first game. You know, DeAndre Baker, rookie, you know, all, I mean, you go down the list of guys, and not only are there, you know, inexperienced in terms of their first-year guys or second-year guys, but these are late-round draft picks. I mean, Tay Davis is a starting linebacker, and he was an undrafted guy last year. So it takes time to develop, and I know, you know, I saw what the Giants are trying to do in terms of rebuilding, you know, the roster, specifically on the defense side of the ball. You had to move on from certain players, certain contracts. I mean, Damon Harrison, that contract, they had to move on from him.
Sure.
Olivier
Vernon.
But again,
Damon Harrison is not fixing their issue.
Right, that's my point. Yeah. I think that people say, well, why do we get rid of these guys? Well, the Giants weren't exactly a great defense when those guys were here for the most part. I mean, they had that one good year in 2016, but I mean, they had to totally rebuild this defense, and they are. I just think that where fans don't see what the Giants are doing is that it's the fact that, you know, people are expecting these guys to make such a jump that it's sort of unrealistic.
Right.
And, you know, to blame Betcher because those expectations that you had as a fan weren't met, I just think that that's naive, and that's just sort of, you know, not the way to look at things. all I can say is that I expected this. I don't know what people expected. I'm not going to sit here and say this person has to lose his job or this person has to get fired or this needs to happen or that needs to happen. No, I think it was week one. It was against a really good team. I mean, you have Lorenzo Carter going against Tyron Smith, who might be the best left tackle in the NFL. You know, you had Dexter Lawrence going against Travis Frederick and Zach Martin. You know, that could be the best center guard in the NFL. So you look at these matchups, you look at what the Giants were going up against, it's tough to do. And so, you know, it's just a matter of people lowering their expectations on this season and understanding who the Giants are, what they are right now, and what you can sort of expect to see moving forward. And for if you were to ask me, I would tell you it's a young defensive team with a lot of young guys that will probably play more young guys later as the season progresses. But it's just sort of what you're going to see moving forward. You're going to see a really bad defense, and it's going to be because there's a lot of young and inexperienced players.
Yeah. I mean, there's really not much more to say there.
You can fire the defensive coordinator and go get yourself another one.
They probably will.
I mean, I hope not. I mean, I certainly think – I mean – If what I think is going on is true, I don't think that there should be anybody that gets fired. The personnel is not good. They've sort of agreed that this roster needs to be rebuilt, right? I think they've come to that realization. We've saw what they did, obviously with the defense, and there's certainly offensively they've done some things. The big thing being drafting a quarterback. So I think they're understanding that we need to rebuild the roster. I just think people need to stop overvaluing certain players. They're not there yet. The hope is that they will get there, and they certainly better get there for the sake of the general manager, because if they don't get there, then it just sets the franchise back even more. But I mean, right now it's a team in transition. It's a rebuilding team, and they're going up against what I think is a Super Bowl contending team. So just gotta relax for a second with these fire this guy, do this, do that. That's not how a rebuilding team operates, in my opinion.
I mean, listen, I agree with you, but given some of the teams that they're going to have to face, I mean, there's going to be some ugly games, some really ugly games.
Listen, I'm not sitting here saying that James Best should just get a free ride throughout the season. I think, like I said, if the miscommunication continues and we don't see players develop, I mean, yeah, you have to look at James Betcher and say, you know, what's going on. But to say it after week one, I just don't think, or week two, or what, you know, whenever, I just don't think it's fair. It's not fair to him, and it's not fair to some of these young players who are still learning the system. And then you're going to fire the defensive coordinator. I just don't think that's not how you build stability, in my opinion.
Yep, no, I agree. But we all know that John Mara is an optics guy. So, come the Jets-Giants game, if they get blown out, wouldn't shock me if there were some changes made just to make some changes. What else do you want to touch on?
I mean, obviously the big thing was the everyone talked about the play calling and how it was. I mean, the play calling, obviously, Pat Shurmur deserves some criticism. I think
absolutely. I've been a supporter of him.
Yeah, I think, and it wasn't just, and I don't want to sound like I'm, you know, not blaming Pat Shurmur at all. I think there was a lot of coaches that try to get too cute in week one. I think I saw Matt Nagy try to get too cute in week one. I think, you know, Bill O'Brien tried to get cute. I mean, there was a lot of coaches that try to get cute. And I think Pat Shurmur as well. Listen, third and one, you have a revamped offensive line, which, by the way, I was really impressed by how well they run blocked. And in pass protection, it was overall good performance, I thought, by the offensive line, especially in their first game together, and especially the right side. Listen, third and one, Saquon Barkley's, you know, averaging what, 10 yards a carry. You get the ball to Saquon Barkley.
It's embarrassing. I mean, how few carries he got, given how good he is, and that they take him second overall, but they invested resources last offseason and this offseason to make sure that their running game was good, and they gave their fucking star, quote unquote, generational, quote unquote, future Hall of Fame running back 11 carries.
I mean, listen, and the thing is that the running game was good. The run blocking was good. It wasn't a situation where they were not moving the ball on the ground. They were. They were moving it very well. And to not give them the ball, I just think sometimes the coaches just overthink it. And obviously, you know, there were other times in the game where he made some questionable, you know, decision making, and some of the play calling was not right. But I think the big thing was getting away from Saquon Barkley. And then, you know, I think I want to also bring up, and I think it was talked about to a certain extent after the game, was, I mean, third down, I mean, 2 for 12, I think it was, or yep. 2 for 11.
Yep, 2 for 12.
I mean, compared to 6 for 10 for the Cowboys, I mean, if you factor in third down and fourth down, the Giants were 3 of 14.
Yeah.
They're 1 of 3 on fourth down and 2 and 11 on third down. I mean, listen, we talked about it at the beginning of the show. It's an inexperienced defense. That's we know
you're,
that.
You're about to take the point right out of my mouth.
You know, but you as an offense, if you don't convert third downs, what you're doing is you're just putting your defense back out on the field, and you're making them play more, you know, more plays, and then the time of possession goes the other way. In Dallas, what they do is they bleed you out, they run the ball, they get into third and short, and then they convert, and they just extend drives, and that's what they do. But for the Giants, in this game, you have to convert third downs. And in any game, actually, you have to convert those third downs. You have to be able to extend drives. It benefits you, but it also benefits the defense as well. And when you're not able to execute on third downs, I mean, 2 for 11, it's not good, man. You're putting the defense in tough spots. And again, inexperienced defense, having to play a lot of plays. You know, that's what happens.
Yeah, and that's part of what makes the lack of Barkley carries completely inexcusable. I mean, like, this goes sort of like last year. Gettleman thought he had a playoff contender, foolishly enough. Like, what did Pat Shurmur think that he had in his defense this year where he thought that he could just not give Saquon Barkley the ball? I mean, what was he watching in practice? What was he watching on film? Like, you need to feed Saquon. Talk about it from any perspective you want. I mean, probably the most overarching one is the fact that running backs have the shortest shelf life of any NFL position out there. Run this guy into the ground. You used him, you use a second overall pick on him, run him into the ground. There is no reason that he should be receiving fewer than 20 carries a game. When you have a quarterback who is immobile, cannot hit wide open receivers on the run multiple times a game, you just traded a top three, arguably the best wide receiver in the NFL, and revamped your offensive line. You pound the rock. It may not be the style of football that we want to see, that we agree the team should be built around, but if that's how you built it, that's how you should play it. And you need to give Saquon Barkley the ball every opportunity you can. The Cowboys defense didn't know what to do with him. It took a miracle run by, I can't even pronounce the cornerback's name on the Cowboys.
Awuzie.
To catch Barkley on his first quarter run. It was a miracle that he got caught. They could have done that all fucking game and at least made the score respectable. Instead, they put up 10 points in 57 minutes, and Eli going down the field again in the fourth quarter, padding his fucking stats before Danny Jones comes in. It's embarrassing. Run the goddamn football. Your quarterback can't hit the throws that he used to. He's seeing ghosts even though he's got a good offensive line. Give him the ball. Keep the defense off the field, for the love of God.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it doesn't even matter where you took the running back. I mean, second overall pick, seventh round pick. If you're as a team averaging 10, 11 yards per carry, and you're third and one, and you have success running the ball, you run the football. Yep. I mean, third and one, you don't give the ball to Barkley.
Forget about draft stock, Weiss. We're talking about the best running back in the league.
Right. I mean, that's what I'm saying. I think even if he's not
a team that drafted Will Hernandez in the second round, who was very good last year, a team that traded for Kevin Zeitler, a team that overpaid Nate Solder because they so desperately needed the help, a team that went out there and said, get the fuck out of here, Chad Wheeler. We want Mike Remmers at right tackle. This is the team that didn't run the ball on third and one.
Or fourth and one. No, or I mean, my point is that it really doesn't matter what you did to build your team. In a game, if you're averaging 10 yards a carry and it's third and one and you don't give the ball to the running back, and then on fourth and one, you don't run the ball again. I mean, to me, that's just, I just think it's a coach overthinking it.
It is. This is just a general rule of thumb. If you're going to go for it on fourth and one, run it on third and one, and then run it on fourth and one.
You've ran the ball very well in the game. You know, you move the ball on the ground, third and one, fourth and one. I just think you got to run the ball, and Pat Shurmur didn't. Another thing is, I think offensively, it's just that short intermediate stuff. Right before the half, that 2 minute drill that they try to put together. I mean, you know, I believe the score was 21-7 at that point, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And you were getting the ball back to start the second half. And this notion that you had one timeout, and I think you had like a minute and 15 or something like that. I have to go back and look. But you just start throwing in the middle of the field, and you're basically taking what the defense has given you. I mean, at that point, obviously,
it gets even more frustrating on the clock. When you watch the game last night and you see both the Texans and the Saints basically driving downfield in two throws.
Yeah, I mean, I think, listen, in a two-minute drill, you want to go short stuff, that's fine, but you got to play the sidelines.
Yep.
Okay, one throw in the middle of the field. Okay, I get it. But then it's like every single throw was middle of the field, middle of the field, 5 yards, 5 yards. And before you know it, that minute 15 went down to 11 seconds and you're at midfield. So, and you already used your one timeout. So, that, I mean, that stuff, it's not going to work. Like I said, the type of offense that we saw Sunday, they're not going to average 10 yards per carry every game. I mean, let's be real about that, right? Saquon Barkley's not going to have, at one point in the game, I think he had 7 carries for 100 and some odd yards. I mean,
that's not
going to be every game. They're going to be games that are going to have to grind it out and get put together drives. But it's just not sustainable throwing the ball 4 yards, 3 yards, 3rd and 13, throw a 3 yard out route. It's not going to work. You can't build your offense with, okay, you know, we're going to take what they're giving us and we're going to hope for one big play from our running back. Like that, it's not going to work. It's not sustainable. You can't win football games, not in today's NFL. And whether it's the quarterback or the head coach, I mean, I put blame on both. I'm not going to sit here and say it's one or the other. I think it's both.
I mean, it's sort of the chicken or the egg fiasco, right?
Like, yeah, exactly.
Right? Like, is Pat Shurmur designing this offense because Eli can't go downfield, or is it just Pat Shurmur's offense and Eli's looking bad in it because that's the play call?
Yeah, I mean, listen, look.
It's got to be both.
It's 21-7. You got 40 seconds remaining. You know, you got a 2nd and 6. You know, you're at like the 33-yard line. I think that's a good time to not throw a 3-yard out route or 3-yard.
Many would agree.
In the middle of the field. But again, I just don't think it's smart decision making. I think you're trying to get points. You play the sidelines. You take a shot. And the Giants just kept taking what Dallas was giving them. And they were going right into Dallas's trap of, hey, we're going to give you the middle of the field, underneath stuff. We're going to let you take 15 seconds off the clock to go 5 yards. And the Giants just kept taking it, and I don't think that was a smart play, not by the quarterback. And obviously, if the head coach is just sort of telling them to take what they give you, I don't think that's going to work either. But, I mean, overall, I think the game was just – the Dallas Cowboys were just a better team.
Yeah.
I think. And, it was week one. I know a lot of people seem to hope or expected other things, but – I mean, if the offense continues to play like this, putting the defense in tough spots, it's going to be tough. It's going to be really, really tough for this team to string together wins, even with this schedule being so easy, as some say.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to the offense a little bit.
Yeah.
Let's talk about, is it Eli's fault? Why does Eli deserve or not deserve any? I'm like rubbing my temples as I say this. Yeah. It's just so ridiculous. I'll just throw some stuff out there. I mean, listen.
I mean, when you say it's Eli's fault, like what do you mean exactly? Like what?
I mean the general debate, right? You look at the box score. You look at the game. The Cowboys put up 35 points in the Giants' defense, and people just instinctively go, the E-Hive goes, oh, well, you know, it's not Eli's fault the defense couldn't stop a nosebleed. Well, yeah, but it's also Eli's fault that the offense had 10 points in 57 minutes, and it's the same guy that we saw last year who's missing wide-open receivers, who can't consistently push the ball downfield, who at this point is single-handedly handicapping the offense because he's got a revamped offensive line. He's got an electric tight end in Evan Engram. He's got the best running back in the league. He's got Sterling Shepard, who's a, I'll say, decent to good receiver. And we're looking at this, and people say, oh, well, you know, it's not Eli's fault. You know what? there's a middle ground. The Giants could have lost because their defense sucks, but if their defense is as bad as it is, and as young as it is, and you can simultaneously acknowledge that this is a lost season, there is no fucking reason for Eli Manning to be starting. If you acknowledge that this entire season is a wash, Dan Jones gains nothing from sitting on the bench. And whether you agree with the pick, disagree with the pick, we both didn't like the pick, but we also think that at this point, it's more beneficial to start the rookie, to both see what you have in him, get him some real game experience, and let him learn so that you can go into next year with a better idea of what you have and not let him play some bullshit garbage time minutes when the team is completely out of it. He'd take like 5 snaps. It's ridiculous. If the defense is this bad and Eli is still as mediocre as ever, and this is his last year on the team, all right? I know we all joke that Dave Gettleman is going to say, you know, he's still good and, oh, I'm going to throw him a 5-year extension. This is Eli's last year.
Yeah. I mean,
I think Eli is not starting next year. There is no reason that in a season that we all acknowledge is lost already, Dan Jones should be sitting on the bench.
Well, I don't think a lot of people are saying it's lost yet. I think there's still people that are sort of holding out hope. But I'll say this. Yeah, I'll say this about the Giants. I do think that they should play Daniel Jones. I think week one, I don't say, I mean, you can't say it's Eli Manning's fault. I think obviously he missed some throws. There were some errant throws, some things he could have done better. I mean, Eli Manning at this stage of his career, okay, he is a inefficient quarterback. He is a game manager quarterback. He's not a guy that can go out there and win you games. He's not a guy that can go and, you know, win a shootout, you know, 45-42 or 38-35. I just don't think, you know, that's Eli anymore. I think, you know, you look at what situation the Giants are facing. They're in a situation where they're a rebuilding team. And this was my whole point this offseason was, you're a rebuilding team. You know, it's clear as day, right? You saw all the guys that left. There was a lot of veterans that left, replaced by a lot of young guys. That's a rebuilding team. You drafted a quarterback. I think they should have done a better job of having a true quarterback competition. When they didn't do that, obviously it was going to be Eli Manning the starter week one. But I don't think Eli should be the starter until they're mathematically eliminated, because they might be mathematically alive until week 12.
Yeah.
At 3-8 or 4-7, whatever. I personally believe if they lose Sunday to Buffalo, I think you have to turn to Daniel Jones at that point. And that doesn't mean that it's Eli Manning's fault. I think the thing that people mix up is that when you say the Giants should play Daniel Jones, that means that you're blaming Eli Manning for everything. No, it's not. Nobody's blaming Eli for a 35-7. Nobody's blaming Eli for the defense being inexperienced and bad. We're just saying, at this stage, given what the Giants are, maybe it's just you just play, you know, Daniel Jones and just let him take the snaps. You're playing a lot of young guys on defense. You've already said you're going to play more younger guys. Ryan Conley, fourth, fifth round pick, is getting snaps. You know, undrafted guys are getting playing time. I mean, just play Daniel Jones. They're opting to still play Eli Manning. And the most frustrating thing to me was that it was 28-10, about 10 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. I think they had it was that fourth down where they didn't get it. I think Eli was sacked or whatever, and he didn't get it. I think he might have missed a throw to Shepard. People said the point was the game was getting out of reach. Dallas had just gone 3-out. I think that was a good time to let Daniel Jones go play the entire or the majority of the fourth quarter. They didn't do that, and I think that to me that's frustrating, because, you know, then we see Eli go out and they get into a third and long and he dumps off for a 3-yard pass and they punt. You know, so it's just things like that. I think that it doesn't make sense. I think that you had an opportunity to give Daniel Jones more playing time. You're not doing that. But I think I'm with you, man. At this point, you know, you're not going anywhere. And if you lose Sunday to Buffalo and you go 0-2, I mean, at that point, I mean, what else is there to do with Eli? I really don't get it. You're just going to trot him out to Tampa Bay?
Yeah, there's nothing else. This is it. This is the end of the line.
It's I think Daniel Jones should play. I mean, I think he should play. I mean, look, a part of me says, you know, you should let Pat Shurmur handle it. But then another part of me is just watches the game on Sunday and it's like, what are we doing here, man? Like, this is a 38-year-old quarterback playing in the fourth quarter, 10 minutes to go. It's, you know, 35-17. Like, what are we doing here? You know, like, yep. Put the kid in the game, okay?
Yeah.
But we saw the noise get a little bit louder after last week, and I think we mentioned this during the offseason, is that if Daniel Jones has a good preseason, which he did, and he has a good training camp, which he did, the noise is just going to get louder. And
yep.
After week one, we saw it get loud. And if they lose to Buffalo at home, huh, I mean,
it's going to be
even louder.
Yep.
Yeah,
it's going to get ugly.
Especially if the offense isn't moving the ball.
Mm-hmm.
See, last week it was just the defense just gave up 35 points and the Cowboys were scoring at will. But if the offense is not able to move the ball against Buffalo at home,
I mean, they weren't really able to move the ball against Dallas either, but whatever.
Yeah, I mean, they were able to move the ball. I just don't think they were able to score points. I mean, they did have 470 yards of total offense.
Dump offs, check downs, whatever. This team sucks.
I'm talking about 3-and-out, 3-and-out, 3-and-out.
Yeah,
you know, 6 points entering the third quarter.
It's bad.
That's what I think. I think if they lose to Buffalo, I think. Oof, it's gonna be tough to.
Do you think Buffalo deserves to be a favorite?
Yeah, I think. I mean, I think Buffalo's a good team. They have a good defense. I think Sean McDermott has done a pretty good job. You know, they made the playoffs a couple years ago. I mean, obviously, people have their opinions about Josh Allen, but
I mean, this is a team that's starting janitors at wide receiver, and if they just go fucking bananas on the Giants secondary, I might break my TV.
Yeah, I mean, they're a team that's sort of like. They're sort of like, okay, we feel like we have our franchise quarterback. We're just trying to put the pieces in place, and they have a good defense. They've done a good job building that defense. Now it's about, you know, trying to find some receivers for our quarterback, and they've done a good job on the offensive line, I think.
Yes. Only bright spot on the offense was Engram.
Yeah, Engram, Barkley. Oh, the offensive line I thought was too.
In terms of individual players that you can point out. Engram, this is going to be his breakout season, provided he could stay healthy.
Provided if he stay healthy, I think 1,000 yards, 8 touchdowns. To me, that would be a Pro Bowl season, I think, for Evan Engram. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely.
Just cross your fingers for him to stay healthy.
I mean, he's the best. He's the best receiving option that they have in terms of from an explosive standpoint and a size standpoint. I mean, there's no reason he can't break 1,000 yards and 7 or 8 touchdowns.
Yeah, I mean, I think the offense is – listen, when they traded Odell Beckham, there's a lot of targets to go around.
Yep.
And I think with Engram, it's just they're scheming ways to get him the football. I mean, you saw
on Sunday. I mean, you look at just pure metrics. I mean, you're talking about a guy who's 4 inches taller than Odell Beckham and had the same 40 time. So,
right.
You know, the athleticism's there. It's just stay healthy, dude, because without you, it's going to be a miserable, miserable offense, even more miserable than it already is. Anything else to discuss before we get into questions?
No, I think I'm ready to get into questions.
Yep. It's been that type of week one. The episodes will get longer with the guests that we'll eventually have on, but for now, you get us. This is a nice warm-up. Shout out to the Nonsense 44 who didn't have a question. He's just a fan of the podcast. This is from Kamal. Are you optimistic about the young defense going forward or terrified about how bad it could get?
I mean, listen, I think with the defense, it's – I just want to see improvement week to week collectively. Individually, I mean, yeah, you want to see some players, second-year guys. You want to see Lorenzo Carter sort of show improvement. B.J. Hill continue to get better. You want to see stuff like that. But, I mean, listen, a lot of these guys are – this is a very young defense and a lot of inexperience. I just personally just want to see them get better, eliminate the miscommunications, and just get better as the season progresses. I don't expect any of these second-year guys or rookies to be Pro Bowlers at the end of the season.
To be honest, I'm a little more terrified than I am, you know, optimistic or excited about them. I mean, if you look at the draft capital that was pumped into this defense, outside of DeAndre Baker, I mean, it's a rough look. You know, B.J. Hill, Lorenzo Carter, third-round picks. Like, you just hope that they become serviceable depth players.
Well, Dexter Lawrence is also a first-round pick.
Well, I was getting to him. They have two. But that's the problem, right? You have a first-round pick at a position that you don't really need. He doesn't really rush the passer. He's just a big body in the middle. You know,
I'm much higher on Dexter Lawrence.
Listen, I don't think he's going to be a bad player. I just think that given every single need on this defense, to waste a pick on a nose tackle is just a monumental waste of resources.
When you look at Dexter Lawrence, you're seeing Snacks Harrison, two down player against the run.
No, I acknowledge he has some pass rush potential. But to use...
I see Linval Joseph.
No, I don't. But whatever.
I'm not saying he's going to be as good as Linval Joseph, but I see more of a Linval Joseph type player. He's crazy athletic for his size. He has to develop the pass rush moves, but this man has power. I mean, I think he's more than just two down nose tackle guy. I think he'll be a guy that can stay on the field for three downs more often than not.
Listen, maybe he'll surprise me, but... You know, you have got a bunch of UDFA and mid to late round guys in the backfield. You have essentially nobody at the linebacker position, and then most of the young guys along the defensive line. I mean, you know, Dalvin Tomlinson, second round pick, B.J. Hill, Lorenzo Carter, third round picks. It's to me, there's just really not much to look forward to. They have zero pass rushers that I'm optimistic will develop. Yes, my stock is down on Lorenzo Carter, but I hope I'm wrong about all this stuff. I'm definitely a little more scared than I am optimistic, but only time will tell.
Yeah, I think the biggest guy that people overvalued was Lorenzo Carter. I think they expected him to be much better.
Hand up, guilty.
Yeah, I think it'll take time. I think he'll be a good player. I just don't know what kind of expectations people have. Like, I don't want to sit here and say, yeah, he's going to get better, and people in their mind think get better is, you know, all-pro pass rusher. No, 10 sacks a year. No, I think Lorenzo Carter will finish the season with somewhere between, you know, 7-8 sacks, and that'll be a good year for him, given, you know, the fact that he's a second-year guy. And then another guy we haven't talked about is the X-Man. O'Shane Zimenez. I mean, this is a third-round pick from Old Dominion. Guy that people thought was going to come in and be like this, you know, immediate impact guy. I don't think so. Right now, situational pass rusher. I study him. I did realize that he does have he's very advanced in terms of pass rushing moves, but there's more to it. And I think we'll see more of him as the season progresses. I'm not as discouraged or about the defense as everyone else is. I expect this early on, but I do also see them getting better as the season progresses. I'm not saying they're not going to be bad. I just don't think they're going to be this bad.
Yep. All right, let's do a couple more. This is an interesting one that I've thought about, and like every time I think about it, I tell myself, all right, take a deep breath, calm down, because you know what the right answer is. This is from Low. I know it's stupid, but it's how I feel. Is it worth the two Super Bowls with all this losing, or would you erase the 2011 Super Bowl but be more consistent the last 8 years, more playoff appearances and division wins, pretty much like the Green Bay Packers? You take the Super Bowl. They're very, very, very hard to win, obviously. You know, you wish the team was more competitive in the seasons afterwards, but listen, you take the Super Bowl and you'd be happy with it.
Yeah, I take the Super Bowl as well.
Yep. From Liam, is there a corner on our team that we can rely on at all this year? My answer is Jenkins until he eventually requests a trade.
I think it'll be Janoris Jenkins. And
yeah,
I said this. Yeah, I've said this all podcast. I think Baker will get better. DeAndre Baker will get better, and you know we'll see Corey Ballantyne step in. I want to see more Julian Love at safety. Anton Bathe is just
bad.
It just seems that he's
bad.
Yeah, he's 35 years old. I mean, the poor guy was. They had him covering Amari Cooper. It's just that's just a mismatch.
Yep.
I think we're point being, I think that they should look at other options than 35-year-old Antoine Bethea.
I agree. From Logan, what are you going to be watching the most for the remainder of the season outside of if Daniel Jones plays? To me, it's whether or not any of these young pass rushers can develop. That's it.
Yeah. I'll take any of these young defensive players.
Sure.
Develop. I want to see more of Ryan Conley. I like the way that guy plays.
Me too.
He's always around the ball. Guys, I hate to use that word because he's white, but I always see people say he's got a motor to him.
He's got a motor. He's a gritty player.
I hate to use those words, but yeah, I want to see more of him. I seem like he's always a guy that's in the backfield. Very fast for his size too. It's impressive. He can get there quick.
Yep. Some of the other questions were already about the draft, and I'm just not going to entertain those.
I see too much people talking about Chase Young and this and that. No, I'm not there yet.
Yeah. All right. So I guess that's about it. Unless you got something else, we could wrap it up.
No, I got nothing else for you.
All right.
I'll wait a couple more weeks before I get on you about something. But
oh,
I got
what's it about?
Nothing.
Nothing. Okay.
Nothing.
All right. Well, in the meantime, that's it for us. Week one in the books. Subscribe. iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, Spotify. You can follow us on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow the blog at GothamSN. Use promo code Gotham, mybookie.ag. Gamble with me all season long. And that's it. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Peace.